Hi, I'm Lisa Prather, and welcome to The Voice of Health with our host, Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, where lives are changed every day through the natural approach to healthcare. Well, let's give a COVID-19 update, like we usually do. The big thing in the news right now is the vaccine.
Sure.
So, Dr. Prather, what is the progress on the vaccine?
Well, it's coming along quite well. They are going to be able to distribute it. It's getting out there. You know, people are actually starting to get it. Healthcare workers and people in nursing homes are the top priority. So those are going to be the ones who get it first. Mm-hmm. And then they'll be able to get it out to the general public. But they're ramping it up, and it's going to be available.
Okay. So why are there two shots for the vaccine, correct? Are they given a month apart?
Right. What they're doing on the vaccinations is when you get the first vaccination, they say it's 56% effective.
Okay.
And then when you get the second one, then it goes over 90% effective. So they are definitely saying that you need to get two shots. They are a month apart, so you would need to plan on that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what it's looking at this point. They are trying to develop a one-shot vaccination, but at this time, they don't have that available right now. It's just a two-shot.
Two-shot with a month apart.
Right.
Okay. Is the vaccine safe? What are they saying about that?
Well, they are saying that the vaccine is very safe. Now, on the symptoms, they are acknowledging that you're going to get all the symptoms of the COVID-19. And they have officially put out that it's pretty mild. However, we are hearing reports from some of the people who did the clinical trials and that people who have been getting it is that they got very, very sick with it. So one of the things that one of the researchers was saying is we really need to be honest with people that a lot of the people when they get the first vaccination feel really, really sick and don't feel like taking the second one. So if you can, he said, if we can be honest with people and say, hey, you can get really, really, feel really sick with this, then people will go in there with the knowledge of that and be willing to get the second vaccine. Because one of his fears was that people wouldn't follow through with a second vaccination and, you know, wonder about whether they should be taking it again. Now, it's actually not a virus that's in it. What they do is they have a protein from the virus. The protein that attaches to the cell is what they're trying to get the body to react to. So that then when you actually get the virus, you recognize it and then attack it so you don't allow it to actually attach to the cells. So it is to cut down on the severity of when you actually have COVID-19.
So it doesn't have the virus.
It doesn't have the virus. And the protein actually does get out of the body within 4 to 5 days. So, you know, on that type of thing, you're going to probably feel sick for about 4 to 5 days.
Then it's going to be symptoms like the COVID-19.
Like the COVID-19, and they vary some, you know, the headaches, the fever, the digestive disturbances, those types of things that you get with the COVID-19 are exactly the same symptoms that you get, except you don't have the lowered oxygen level. So it's something to be aware of and something to plan on if you're getting the vaccination.
Yes. So does the vaccine eliminate the mask wearing and social distancing?
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, people were really hoping for. And the interesting thing is that this vaccination doesn't prevent you from getting the virus or spreading the virus.
Okay.
What it's to do is to reduce the symptoms is what it's, at least at this time, we don't think that it does. So, you know, the spread of the virus is still going on, even if you've gotten the vaccination. So it's just to lower the symptoms that are associated with the virus. It cuts down on the amount of mortality and severity of the disease. So they are saying that we still need to use the masks, still do the social distancing to keep the spread of the virus from going on. So, you know, that's one thing that they're trying to put out there. This isn't going to stop the virus. what they're hoping is it cuts down on the big problem is the hospitalizations overwhelming the hospitals, and of course the deaths that are associated with it. So that's what they're really trying to cut down with this vaccination, is hospitalizations and deaths.
But if you listen to the media out there, it's
like this is the answer. Yeah. And that's one thing that the researchers and Fauci and different people are saying. No, we don't want to think that this makes the whole thing gone. Mm-hmm. You know, that we still need to really be vigilant and keep the social distancing and keep the mask wearing and all those types of things. And some people are saying, well, that's not what I was hoping for from the vaccination. Mm-hmm. So it's an awareness. And that's one of the reasons, though, that they were able to put it out quickly, is if it actually had the virus that would prevent you from getting it, that would have taken much, much longer to be able to develop the vaccination. Mm-hmm. So they are still working along those lines, but the protein was a much safer and easier way to develop a vaccination. So that was the thought process along those lines. And again, it's to cut down on the hospitalizations and deaths associated with the virus.
So are they still working on the vaccine that would have the virus?
Yeah,
they have been working on it.
Right. They are hoping for, one, a one-shot vaccination, mm-hmm. which helps with compliance. And they're still in the research on actually using the virus to be able to make a vaccination where it would actually eliminate it mm-hmm. from being spread. So
they're still working on
it's still a work in progress.
So what natural things should people do to boost their immune system?
Well, again, one of the biggest things is that, you know, we talk about is that 20% of the people on this virus aren't even susceptible to it. So there are people out there who don't eat as much exposure as you get, you're still not going to get it. There are then 40% of the people who have no symptoms that are associated with it. Mm-hmm. And then we also have 20% of the people who have mild symptoms. And then the other 20% are the ones that we have to worry about. Why is it that some people don't have any reactions with this?
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
You know, and really what they've determined is the nutritional health of the individual. Mm-hmm. It's how healthy you are. Mm-hmm. So what is your body's ability to fight off the virus? And the things that everybody agrees on is vitamin D is absolutely critical, and they've found very strong correlations between the levels of vitamin D and whether people even get the virus at all. So that's a very important thing.
Is that why everybody's going down to Florida?
Yes. Actually, that's the best vitamin D out there is the sunshine. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole idea of closing down the beaches during the process on this with
the
pandemic.
At the beginning when they... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, you know, the best place that people should be is on the beaches trying to get some sunshine. Mm-hmm. That helps with their immunity. Vitamin C, of course, is very important. Keep your immune system up. Zinc is absolutely critical. The whole process of the loss of taste and smell is because when you get this particular virus, the body uses a tremendous amount of zinc to help to fight the virus. And when you get too low, you lose the sense of taste and smell. That's one of the symptoms that you are low on zinc. So if you can get your zinc back up, then the severity of the virus goes way down. Mm-hmm. And then also vitamin A. Vitamin A really helps with respiratory infections and keeps that under control. It's a very well-known antiviral, anti-lung infection. So really keeping up with those is very critical type of aspect.
And that's what we do at the Prather Practice.
Right. And we can actually test out and right. see how much you need and what is your deficiencies.
But it's so important to be healthy, stay healthy.
Correct.
Right. So vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin A.
Right.
Very important.
Now, one of the big questions I get from people is if you've already had the virus, mm-hmm. do they need to get the vaccination? That's one of the questions that I've gotten from several people who have had the virus. Mm-hmm. Do I then need to get the vaccination?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question. And the thing that they put on out there is that getting the virus right now gives you about 3 months of immunity. is the consensus along those lines. And then you become susceptible to it again. And the vaccination is giving immunity for, they're saying at this point, for 2 years to mm-hmm. keep the levels down. So one of the things that if you've had the virus, you know, how long ago did you have it? Would be one of the questions that would be brought up. So if you have had it within the last 3 months, probably you can wait a little bit and then get the vaccination from when you actually had it. If you've had it longer than 3 months, that would be very legitimate to get the vaccination at that point. Mm-hmm. Because the longer that you can wait to get the vaccination, the more likely you're going to have only a one-shot vaccination. And then also they're improving the vaccinations as you go along. So the rule of thumb is if you've had it, you're good for 3 months. If you haven't had it, or if you had it 3 months ago, then you are actually eligible to get the vaccination at that point.
Okay. And you said the effective percentage for the first shot was
56%.
And then getting the second shot
took you over 90% to actually cut down on the symptoms.
But they're concerned about compliance because people will get sick, will get the symptoms.
And that's one thing. Now, well, I have heard from one person who got the vaccination. The first time they actually didn't have a reaction, it was the second time that they really had the issue. But a lot of people are getting it on the first time. Mm-hmm. So just be aware as you go into the vaccination, 4 to 5 days is when you're going to have the symptoms while that clears out the protein. And just be aware of it before you go in. And then that helps the process. Because if you think that you're not supposed to get sick at all, mm-hmm. and you get sick, you're saying, well, maybe I shouldn't get the second one.
Yeah. Okay. So. Well, thank you, Dr. Prather, for the COVID update. When we come back, we're going to talk about aluminum toxicity, what you need to know.
You can win a free 60-minute massage in a relaxing spa at the Prather Practice. Each month, we have a drawing to give away a free massage to one of our lucky Facebook and Twitter fans. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.
The Voice of Health Wellness Tip featuring Rapid Release Technology. What professionals out there use the Rapid Release Technology?
It was invented by a chiropractor, and chiropractors actually are really quite innovative and have come up with quite a few devices. So chiropractors obviously were the first ones to start using it. Physical therapists, occupational therapists, massage therapists are also using it. Athletic trainers,
the NFL, NBA.
NBA, NHL, PGA. So it's very important for sports. A lot of Olympic athletes are using that to maintain the function of their body. So for sports, for recovery, even after surgeries, headache clinics are using it.
I've even taken the softer head over someone's cranium and that back occiput area.
Sure.
And you know, we have sutures in our skull and work the sutures with it. The headache people just love that.
You just see people kind of drifting off.
Uh-huh.
So during the treatment, if you're not careful, I mean, people are just going to fall asleep on you.
That's all right. TMJ, using that small head.
Yeah, and temporomandibular joint syndrome can be very, very devastating to people. Getting that under control can really help out. One of the things that's very interesting is that we used it for people with depression even. One of the things that occurs with depression, pain can kind of kick that off. And then also the levator scapula. As you release that, then all of a sudden people can start breathing.
Those are up in the neck area, that upper back.
We call those the tension muscle mm-hmm. headaches. Getting that release can actually change people's anxiety levels and decrease their depression levels.
Relax muscles and release aches, pains, and tension through rapid release high-speed vibration therapy. Experience the benefits of rapid release therapy by scheduling an appointment at the Prather Practice. And to purchase your own, go to our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. Click on the rapid release banner and enter code PRATHER2020 for a $100 discount available to the Voice of Health Radio listeners.
Since 1893, the Wheeler Mission has been ministering to the homeless, poor, and needy in central Indiana. The Prather Practice is honored to be partnering with the Wheeler Mission to help meet the immediate needs of those they serve, and we're inviting you to partner along with us. Right now, the Wheeler Mission has a need for masks, bottled water, and new unopened underwear in all sizes for men, women, and children. The Prather Practice is now collecting these items for the Wheeler Mission, and you can drop off items at our office at 8902 North Meridian, Suite 101. The Wheeler Mission exists to provide Christ-centered programs and services to the homeless and those in need. Their vision is to see every man, woman, and child they serve equipped to be productive citizens who enjoy lasting success in Christ. Your gift turns this vision into reality. Learn more about the work of the Wheeler Mission and how you can help by visiting their website at wheelermission.org.
Candles burning low, lots of mistletoe, lots of snow and ice everywhere we go.
You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, the most comprehensive wellness center in the Midwest.
We're going to talk about aluminum toxicity, what you need to know. And is aluminum, Dr. Prather, a toxin in the body?
Yes. Aluminum has been classified as a toxin. Mm-hmm. They have found that people who work in aluminum factories or mining or in towns where that is being processed as a serious problem. They also, the big thing that showed up aluminum toxicity was dialysis. So they do use aluminum in the dialysis process.
I didn't know that.
And
interesting.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And then what they found is that cities that in city water, the areas where there was high levels of aluminum, mm-hmm. then people would develop aluminum toxicity, and that was a major cause of death in people who were getting dialysis.
It sounds toxic.
It is toxic. So it is something that has been acknowledged and recognized with a very definite set of symptoms that occur in the individuals, and they have found certain things that occur. Now, it is something that usually if you're taking it is the third most common element in the Earth's crust.
Oh, interesting. The third?
Most common.
Okay.
So it is something that is a very common type of thing. Mm-hmm. We do take quite a bit in our diet, but most of the time we do actually pass it through. There are certain conditions where it does get into the blood plasma. That's when it becomes a problem.
Okay, is that because too much levels of aluminum or?
Yes, the whole thing along those lines is that if the body is overwhelmed with the amount of aluminum, now you can actually get the aluminum in several different ways. It does absorb through the skin. Mm-hmm. You can breathe it in, which are actually more toxic than taking it through the digestive tract, because the body actually will attach it to other different types of minerals and then pass it through. The vast majority of the aluminum goes through, about 96%. Now, the problem is if your digestive system is working properly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do have some people who are more susceptible to absorbing it in through the gut. But if you also then bypass the normal type of amount, or you get extremely large amounts of aluminum into your gut, that's when you actually start to have problems.
So is aluminum toxicity widely recognized?
No, it's not. That is one of the problems that has been an issue, is that the thinking is, if they take it in through the gut, it's not really a big deal. Mm-hmm. Because the body, for the majority of people, they are able to actually attach it and get rid of it. So they pretty well say that if you take it in through the gut, 96% is going to be eliminated. And that is actually true, but there are people who are not good at being able to attach it. Also, as for very young infants, mm-hmm. or children, mm-hmm. It's much easier to absorb it into the system. If there is some disturbances in the gut functioning, especially as you get older, you become much, much more susceptible to being able to absorb the aluminum because your digestive process isn't working as well. And so there are people who, or if you are overwhelmed by a large amount, then the body is no longer able to handle it and it actually absorbs into our system. And one of the problems is the amount of aluminum that people are taking in in our diet right now is about 20 times greater than what our grandparents had.
And why is that?
One of the things is that aluminum is an excellent preservative. So as a preservative, and you can actually, they've actually even classified it as organic. So a lot of the aluminum has been added into the into our food system.
Okay, I'm still stuck on, oh, okay, they classify it as organic.
Organic. So you can actually, you can actually, and considered for the majority of people non-toxic. So you can actually label something as organic, processed, and one of the problems is how are you going to preserve it over a long period of time? So what they do is they add aluminum into it, and so it preserves it, and then all of a sudden you've got a problem going on. And it's not something that you necessarily have to reveal to the public.
So is there proof that aluminum is a toxin?
Yes. There is just a huge number of scientific research out there that aluminum can become a very, very strong toxin and can be extremely deadly. However, the FDA at this point has not really acknowledged that and taken the appropriate steps.
So what type of problems can occur with aluminum toxicity?
Well, interestingly enough, the aluminum, you know, we talked about when it gets into the plasma, that's really the big problem. And you can get it in through the skin absorbing it, or you can breathe it in, or it can actually come through the overwhelm the digestive system, or if it actually goes directly into the bloodstream. That's when it gets into the blood. The blood doesn't like to circulate it around because it is a toxin. So it finds different places to deposit it. The places that it will deposit it are actually three. So it will deposit it in the nervous system, which causes a whole host of symptoms that start to occur and actually start to cause different types of damage to the nervous system. So it can mess with people's so anorexia. So I've had a lot of people who had anorexia that we were able to solve when we were able to get their aluminum levels down, because it was actually affecting the nervous system, and people would no longer want to eat or have issues with eating. So anorexia was one of the big things on that. You would actually have some abnormal movements that people would have. There would be some shaking that would start to occur. One of the things is it's a big cause of ALS. It also can kick off a lot of upper motor neuron diseases. It can actually imitate Parkinson's. One of the things is that it's Alzheimer's. There was a very big thing.
I've heard a lot
thing.
About that with
right.
the connection.
The connection with Alzheimer's. And one of the things is aluminum toxicity can imitate Alzheimer's. Now, one of the things is they did a lot of research on Alzheimer's, and there can be other causes for Alzheimer's. One of the things that it can be kicked off by a virus or a mycoplasma combination along those lines. But one of the other causes on that is aluminum. So what they were doing is they did a lot of research on aluminum and Alzheimer's and found that not everybody had high levels of aluminum. So they said, well, that's not the cause. It's one of the causes. It's not the only cause.
Right.
Because I have had patients with developing Alzheimer's and found very, very high levels of aluminum. And as soon as we detox the aluminum, a lot of the symptoms were going away. But not every patient that we test on with Alzheimer's actually has high aluminum.
You mean it's not all or nothing?
and one of the big problems with the medical research is, well, it's either all or nothing, or, you know, they're looking for a one cause, and it's a narrow vision along those lines that doesn't make sense. You know, but we have seen very, very definite dementia is one of the things that starts to occur with the neurological types of issues. All sorts of neurological things start to happen. When you actually get on that, behavioral disturbances in kids, ADHD, learning disabilities, a lot of those types of things that we have seen with high aluminum, that is one of the major types of things that start to occur. So we see all sorts of different types of psychological problems actually clear up once we get rid of the aluminum. So the whole thing along the lines of the aluminum in the nervous system cause a whole host of symptoms. And one of the things is a lot of gastric disturbances too. And as we get rid of that, then that actually starts to clear up also. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of things along the nervous system and very, very clearly associated with that. When we find the high aluminum and we actually start to detox it, we see those symptoms clear up.
Right. I mean, the nervous system is so important.
It controls so many different types of aspects. Mm-hmm. The other area that the aluminum will actually deposit into is the bones, the skeletal structure. So what it does is the body actually will deposit it in the aluminum and it will take the place the calcium, magnesium, and phosphorus, the building blocks of the body. And then it will take the calcium, magnesium, and it will oftentimes deposit it into soft tissue, especially the arteries. So aluminum will actually cause arteriosclerosis and then osteoporosis. So we've had people who were coming in who were about ready to get fractures in their hips, you know, when they were getting a DEXA scan, and then reverse the aluminum out of their system, and when they were tested later, they were perfectly normal. So the aluminum is something that we definitely look for. There are other causes. Again, it's not a one-cause type of thing, but osteoporosis and osteomalacia is one of the biggest things that start to occur, and very well proven in all the cases when they were the dialysis patients and then the aluminum factory patients. It's one of the things that they always developed was fractures and weakening of the bones. So those are some of the things.
Interesting.
And then the last place is the fascial material. Mm. So we've seen a tremendous amount of problems with myofasciitis, is what it's called, from aluminum toxicity.
Mm, interesting. So, I mean, it has big effects.
Has a big effect on the system.
Okay. When we come back, more on aluminum toxicity, what you need to know.
Listen to the Voice of Health Radio on your smartphone or tablet on all of the top radio apps available. TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. You can find these apps and more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is the Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.
Laughter is the best medicine.
People ask me for advice all the time. Like, oh man, like what age do you tell your kids that Santa doesn't exist? Here's an answer: when you can no longer afford their Christmas list. My second kid came out with the worst list. This is his list. He's like, look, Dad, I need a smartphone, some Air Jordans, and an iPad. Finally, I was like, well, I'm Santa Claus. I didn't want to tell you. I was hoping that your friends would tell you, and then I would avoid it. But you have backed me into a financial corner with your $3,000 Christmas list. Now redo your list and keep it under $150.
The Voice of Health Minute with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice.
There's certain diagnostic tests that different people should be taking, but what does everyone need at least on an annual basis? And I'm talking about from a baby to 105, that everyone needs. We have three tests that we talk about. Our blood test with the urinalysis is something whenever you come in for your annual exam that you should have a nice thorough one. That's recommended by every single healthcare provider, insurance, hospitals, all the doctor groups all recommend that. But I'd also throw in there a care analysis, and I would also throw in a GI stool kit as things that everyone should be having on an annual basis just to get the basics of how your health is going and give a synopsis of what's happening and what should be done.
Schedule your appointment at the Prather Practice, 317-848-8048. The Prather Practice. Restoring Hope. Detailed lab tests are crucial to understanding your health. As Dr. Prather always says, if you don't test, you don't know. There are certain lab tests that all of us should have at least once per year. At the Prather Practice, we recommend three affordable tests that provide the blueprint to your health. The Prather Profile is the most comprehensive blood analysis available, providing more information about the function of your body than any other test. Minerals are the common deficiencies in the body, and hair analysis is the most effective way to analyze mineral levels. The bowels have the largest influence on the immune system, and the best way to test that is through the GI Effects Toolkit. The Prather Profile Blood Analysis and the GI Effects Toolkit are even covered by most insurances. Don't guess when it comes to your health. Discover the blueprint to your health at the Prather Practice by calling us at 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. The Prather Practice, restoring hope.
Merry, Merry Christmas, baby. Sure did treat me nice. I said, Merry Christmas, baby.
I'm Lisa Prather, and you're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, where we get to the root cause of your health issue.
Give me a diamond ring for Christmas.
Well, we're talking today about aluminum toxicity, what you need to know. And Dr. Prather, you talked about how the aluminum can get into the nervous system, bones, and then the fascia.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit more about the fascia.
Yeah, myofasciitis is what's caused, one of the things that you talk about with that. And people don't know what that is. And basically, you have fascia. When you look at the anatomy pictures and you see the white area, you know, they use the red for the muscles and then they use white.
Yes.
That's the fascia. And interestingly enough, it's a very large organ within the body. And they have actually proven that it is an organ. They used to think that it was just connective tissue and really didn't have a whole lot of purpose and wasn't that important. And they found out that all the fascia within the body is all connected together and it kind of holds us in place and actually acts as an organ. So it's extremely, extremely important, far more important than...
That wasn't in my anatomy coloring book.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't. And something that is actually a very recent discovery. Matter of fact, I have a good friend of mine who's a chiropractor who talks about fascial release and how important it is for the body. So that's his whole thing, and actually wrote an entire book along those lines and has a tremendous amount of success. And one of the things that we use is the rapid release, and that's actually a fascial release type of a mechanism. But one of the things that can happen if you have high aluminum is that the aluminum, the body is trying to figure out where to put this aluminum. And one of the places that it'll put it is in the fascial material. And that actually causes a hardening of this fascia and will actually cause micro tears throughout it and will cause a tremendous amount of pain in people who have that particular problem. As a matter of fact, I had one patient who came in who had the highest levels of aluminum that was ever seen, still has the record.
You mean toxicity. The lab?
Yeah, the labs said, "Wow, this is, we've never seen one this high before." And she had it deposited in the fascial material, and basically any type of a movement that she would make would cause excruciating pain. She had to travel to our office, laying in the back of a station wagon, to be able to make it there because she couldn't even sit up. So it was a tremendous, and had gone to about 8 different doctors trying to figure out what was the problem, and no one had checked for aluminum toxicity. And so we had checked for it as one of our normal type of procedures, found it, and then that's when I actually at that point found out about the myofasciitis and had read about it and as a major problem and how that actually worked. As we eliminated that from her system, I mean, she's doing fine now.
Yeah.
You know,
this must have been a while ago, because you said station wagon.
Yes, it was back in the 80s. And we're still seeing the patient because, you know, we're the only ones who can kind of keep things under control. And we check it on a regular basis to see what's going on with that, make sure it's under control. Because her father actually also had that. I don't know if it was in the well water or what it was, but he actually had that disease also, but never found any hope for it. Mm. So it's extremely painful and something that is oftentimes missed as a diagnosis.
Right. If so, you don't test it, if you don't know how to read the labs.
If you don't even know to suspicion that, or vast majority of doctors out there don't even recognize aluminum toxicity as an issue in people's lives, mm-hmm. and are missing that as a very important aspect of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had kids with very, very, and one of the things in aluminum factories, you know, where they're actually making that, and in the towns, there is a lot of disturbances in the children, you know, on, you know, just terrible tantrums and behavioral issues. And when they actually get the aluminum down or get them out of there and get the levels down, those go away. Mm-hmm. So,
Dad are saying hallelujah.
Yeah, very important type of thing to test for.
So, how can you know if you have aluminum toxicity?
Well, you have to do a lab test, and the best way to do that shows up along those lines is hair.
Hair analysis.
Hair analysis is considered the gold standard for checking for aluminum toxicity, and it also with that hair analysis. Aluminum toxicity is the most common toxicity that we find, much more common than lead, mercury, any of the other types of things, mm-hmm. arsenic, any of those.
And I know we use one of the top labs in the world.
We use what's considered the best lab for mm-hmm. actually determining those things.
Okay. So who is at most at risk for aluminum toxicity?
Well, the people who are most at risk for aluminum toxicity are the elderly and also the very young. So those are the ones who are most at risk. When you're actually younger, it's more commonly boys because it is more likely to be absorbed. And then also it passes the blood-brain barrier, so it goes to the nervous system more commonly in boys than in girls. That's why you have more behavioral problems with boys than girls, because they do have that blood-brain barrier is not as strong as in girls. However, in women, as they get older, they're more commonly involved in that. So women actually, older women, will be more likely to absorb and have problems with aluminum toxicity than men. So it switches between the two. That's also why I think that osteoporosis is more common in women than it is in men. And also Alzheimer's is more common in women than in men.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting.
Those are some of the things that actually go along with those. There are also some hormonal and digestive system problems that can kick that off. One of the things is if you have a hyperparathyroid, which controls the mineral balances in the body, then that also sets you up for a higher possibility of absorbing aluminum. And then also dietary, if you are low on calcium and phosphorus, then you are more likely to be absorbing the aluminum also. So those are a lot of the types of things. So there's some nutritional, that's where you get into the gut issues, hormonal, and then also the age, very young or very old.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how common is aluminum toxicity?
Well, when they went around and the CDC did a study on children to find out what were some of the problems. Do they have a lot of heavy metal toxicity? And specifically, they were looking for lead and mercury and arsenic, but they also did the other testing. And they found out that about 65% of all children show up some type of heavy metal toxicity.
And 65%.
And aluminum is the most common one found.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very high level along those lines. When you're talking about older people, aluminum is something that we find on a very common type of basis. And probably we're talking about, from our studies, about 40-30% of all older people also are showing up high aluminum.
I remember when lead was such a big deal, remember?
Right.
When was that? In the 70s. And
Oh, yeah.
They were talking about lead.
And lead, we find more on children and also on older people, but when we find it on, it isn't as common as the aluminum.
As aluminum.
Yeah. It's actually rare that we find lead toxicity.
Now, you had talked about the hair analysis is the best method for detecting aluminum. Why is that?
The hair is, you know how the body's trying to get rid of the aluminum?
Mm-hmm.
Well, through the hair is one of the ways that it will actually try to get rid of it. And you can actually tell people, one of the things is once we kind of clear out, they say, well, my hair is growing so much better and so much thicker. It's interesting because the toxicity actually poisons the hair itself, but that is one of the major ways that the body tries to get rid of any type of toxicity, especially metal. It tries to get it out through the hair, and then it kind of pushes it out through the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the best way to find out if you actually have aluminum toxicity. And we do find a very one-to-one relationship to the levels of aluminum and to any type of a toxin level for minerals or for metals. In the hair is the best place to find that.
Yeah, and I just got my hair cut, and she knows now. Do you need a hair sample?
right.
Because I do the hair analysis at least once a year.
Right.
Like for an annual.
Yes, I recommend that. That should be something that's done. And it should be done even on little infants. As soon as you can get some hair, first cutting, you should get it analyzed just to make sure that everything's okay. But that should be done at least once a year.
Yeah. Okay. When we come back, more on aluminum toxicity, what you need to know, and how we treat it at the Prather Practice.
Never miss an episode of The Voice of Health so that you can stay informed and empowered about your health. Get a podcast of our show automatically delivered to you every week by signing up for our show on iTunes. You can find that link on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. And don't forget, thevoiceofhealthradio.com has complete archives of all of our past episodes with an audio library of information to help you add more life to your years and more years to your life. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. The Voice of Health Wellness Tip with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice.
Well, let's talk about the role chiropractic care plays in chronic kidney disease. Someone out there might say, what does that chiropractic have to do with
chronic kidney disease? Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that I tell all the patients who have that problem. A lot of the people who come in who have chronic kidney disease, the way that we figure that out is because they're coming in because of low back pain.
Right, what they think is structural low back pain, which is more kidney issue.
Sure, I had a gentleman who came in, says I've been to three chiropractors, they adjust me, they can't seem to do anything about my low back pain. I check him out and I say, the back pain is not coming from your back.
Sure.
It's coming from your kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
You're in chronic kidney disease, let's do some blood work on that, see what's going on. But in the meantime, there is not only as we are chiropractors are we adjusting the spine,
mm-hmm.
but we're also adjusting other skeletal structure,
mm-hmm.
but we're also doing visceral adjustments too. So we actually do a kidney adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with the kidneys is they become inflamed when they're in chronic kidney disease. And when they become inflamed, they drop down because they put pressure and the kidneys will actually drop. When they do that, they hurt. Also, when they do that, they don't work as well. So one of the quickest ways that we can change some of the numbers on the chronic kidney disease on the blood work is we do an adjustment called a kidney lift. It's a non-painful type of adjustment where we actually
You clarified that.
Yes.
Painful. What are you, lifting my kidneys?
Yeah, we lift the kidneys up into place and people go, oh, my gosh, my pain is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It just disappeared. It also, when I do that, we see a decrease in the blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So the blood pressure actually improves. And then we see on the urinalysis and on the blood work, the numbers improve immediately. Now, there can also be neurological interference. There is different nerves that go directly to the kidneys, and that could be related to the spine. So doing those adjustments, we've also seen some very good changes in the function of the kidney. So the nerves control everything, so it's not just the visceral adjustment on the kidneys that we do, mm-hmm. but also we do the neurological adjustments if they are necessary. Mm-hmm. But this gentleman had absolutely nothing wrong, no interference with his spine on the nerves going there. It was purely that the kidneys had dropped.
Schedule your appointment at the Prather Practice, 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. The Prather Practice, restoring hope.
Joy to the world.
You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of The Prather Practice, where our mission is restoring hope to our patients.
Well, we're talking today about aluminum toxicity, what you need to know. And Dr. Prather, let's talk about what sources of aluminum can be an issue.
Sure. One big thing is deodorant. Remember that taking it in through the skin is one of the major issues along mm-hmm. those lines. And if you put it on your skin, it goes into the bloodstream quicker than if you eat it.
And that's your lymph system right there.
The lymph system, and it absorbs right in. Toothpaste has high levels of aluminum. Most of the classic, you have to go to a natural one to actually get one that doesn't have aluminum. Mm-hmm. So that's a big area along those lines. It is also in foods. You also use it in cookware, aluminum foil, aluminum pans. That's a big area. A lot of people, we tell people that they need to, we find out what kind of cookware they have, tell them to stop using their aluminum cookware and stop using aluminum foil. There was a family that the mom cooked everything in aluminum foil.
In aluminum foil.
Yeah, that was just their way of doing it. Mm. That's how she was taught to cook. And it was causing a huge problems for the entire family. Baking powder has a large amount on that. Also, salads gets large amounts. So if you take a salad bar and you put it out there and you put salad out there for any time, it pretty well wilts and it looks terrible.
Is that why you never do salads?
That's why I never do salads, yes.
Restaurants.
Because what they do then is they spray it with aluminum water.
Uh-huh.
And as that hits that, it will. If you hit it with aluminum water, that salad will look like it's fresh the entire day. So if you get the packaged salads, mm-hmm. you know, that are already cut up and everything like that, they drench them in aluminum water.
Okay.
So that's one of the ways that you can actually keep it going. It is now also a very big preservative in food. The amount of aluminum that's used as a preservative in food has gone up 40 times in the last 20 years. Mm. So there's a huge amount going along with that. Antacids. Tums and all those different types of antacids, that is all aluminum. That's the main ingredient along those lines.
Some people live on Tums.
I know. And almost mm-hmm. all of them have aluminum toxicity. It's a very big problem, and they don't know what's going on. Buffered aspirin is buffered with aluminum. And then also a lot of medications along those lines. But baking powder is also...
No Christmas cookies this year.
Yeah, well, you have to use something besides baking powder along those lines. And then one of the ways that it goes directly into the plasma... That is a real big problem because you're bypassing all the different types of defenses is vaccinations.
Mm.
Vaccinations have very large amounts of aluminum in it, and they use it as what's called an adjuvant. So it's something that kicks off the immune response and is used very, very... and one of the things is that they say that when you talk about the CDC, when they're talking about it, they talk about the aluminum, they say it's very, very safe. One of the problems on the aluminum is they put it in big, huge containers,
mm-hmm.
and the aluminum settles down in the bottom. So when they draw it, when you if you're getting the top ones, you don't get that much aluminum. But if you get down to the bottom, when they're actually drawing the vaccinations, then you get a large amount of aluminum. So a lot of the problems that are occurring, especially in boys and children, from the vaccinations where they have learning disabilities and a lot of the issues that they're talking about, the huge amount of increase along those lines, I feel is oftentimes aluminum toxicity. And when we do the testing on that, we find a large amount of the boys that are children that are being brought in with behavioral issues that can be related to the vaccinations is associated with the aluminum toxicity and goes away once we detox them out of the aluminum.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about the treatment at the Prather practice for the aluminum toxicity.
Sure.
How do you, you know, detoxify someone from the aluminum?
Well, the aluminum, one of the things is medically what they tried to do was chelation, where they would do the IV chelation and it would try to go through the kidneys. And it would actually usually damage the kidneys. Aluminum is actually very hard on the kidneys. So it wasn't very successful, and usually it took several years to be able to get that down. We have been able to come up with some homeopathics for aluminum detox, and we actually get rid of it very quickly. And we also support the kidneys during that time where we really don't have a whole lot of problems. We also provide some minerals along those lines. So the calcium is very important, and making sure that you get a good balance of the minerals as you're taking it. And those minerals will actually bind to the aluminum and get it out quite safely. Mm-hmm. So we're finding excellent results along those lines. We're 100% successful on getting the aluminum out of the system. It's pretty much a no-brainer at this point. So our ability in our office on detoxing the aluminum is extremely successful. And at this point, medically, they have not had a very good success with that.
Okay. So if someone's, you know, listening and thinking, you know, how do I know if I have aluminum toxicity? What would you recommend?
Best thing is a good quality hair analysis. That is a very, very strong type of way of actually determining that, and something that considered completely accurate. So getting in there and actually doing that is important. And one of the things that we recommend is that, you know, like you get your annual blood test, you should also get annually a hair analysis. And that's not something that's normally done. So that's where we get into the whole structure function, because we're thinking beyond what is normally done. And we're talking about a tremendous number of people who are actually showing up along those lines. So we're finding that 65% of all children have the 65% of all the children have heavy metal toxicity, and about 65% of the older people have heavy metal. When we're talking about adults, we're normally talking about 20%. So those are kind of the numbers along those lines. So you're talking about most of the older people and most of the younger people. A majority actually are showing up positive for heavy metals. So that's where we really need to concentrate on and really work, because we can really cut down a lot of those problems that are associated with both those age groups.
And, you know, to say the results that you get, you know, by detoxing, and it's a gentle detox.
Well, that's one of the things is we really bind things, and it's definitely something that people feel like they're detoxing, but it doesn't cause the major issues that are normally occurred with chelation, getting that out. But we are 100% successful on all heavy metal toxicities on getting rid of those.
Well, thank you, Dr. Prather. Very informative and interesting on aluminum toxicity.
Thank you, Lisa.
The Prather practice is located at 8902 North Meridian Street on the north side of Indianapolis, just south of the I-465 loop. If we can help you to achieve better health, we'd love to hear from you. Connect with our office at 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Join us again here next week or anytime on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com for The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.